Sundays with Sinatra with your host, Joe Piscopo, on Music Radio 77 WABC.
Hey, Joe on the radio, Ramsey Mazda, Sundays with Sinatra. I'm so honored to bring Mark Stein to the airwaves because I always knew of Mark and watched him on TV, and he's so funny, and he's so to the point, and he's so refreshing on television. I had no idea he knew so much about Frank Sinatra, so I called my folks at the Frank Sinatra camp, you know, and I said, Mark Stein, is that, yeah, he's a big, big fan. I said, I must get him on the show. So it is with respect for all the knowledge of, in my opinion, the greatest entertainer of all time, Frank Sinatra, Mark Stein joins us. Hey, Mark, welcome to the show. So awesome for you to jump on the air with us, man.
Hey, I've just been enjoying listening to that. You know that, what you were talking about, Let's Face the Music and Dance,
yes,
that
sir.
Little mariachi,
yes, sir,
thing at the end.
What is that?
Billy May said to me years ago, he goes, you know, Frank thinks he can read an orchestral score, but he can't really. So he was looking at it before the session, and he sees this thing, and he knows it's a thing, but he doesn't know exactly what thing it is. And so he says to Billy May, what's that at the end? And Billy May says, don't worry about it. You're going to love it. And he did. He loved that mariachi.
It was beautiful. Thank you for explaining that. Because I remember I saw an interview, Mark Stein, with Frank Sinatra Jr., rest his soul. And he said Billy May had a great sense of humor. So he would, and they also say he'd like to tip a little bit while he was doing the session.
Oh, yeah.
Is that all true, Mark, huh?
Yeah, no, that is true. And he'd always leave it to the that fantastic arrangement of Come Fly With Me.
Yeah.
He basically wrote that an hour before they played it.
What?
And because he'd had a rather heavy bout of imbibing. And the ink was actually still wet on the parts as he passed them around to the band. But you know what? The Sinatra-May partnership is all about the comedy, the way they love to take very old exotic songs, like Road to Mandalay or Moonlight on the Ganges or Granada, and they would just have a hell of a time with them. And there's nothing like that. You know, Moonlight on the Ganges, Granada, The Road to Mandalay. It's all such fun, and that's Billy May and Frank Sinatra finding the same comedy and music.
And how great is it, Mark Stein, that they work together for Come Dance With Me, that award-winning, or I think won almost every Grammy Award that year, 1959. Mm. And then you cut to 20 years later when Trilogy came out, and in the past version of Trilogy, Mr. Sinatra goes and he calls Billy May up. And you know what? The energy was, they didn't lose a step. Matter of fact, I wanted to hear your thoughts on that, but also, Mark, the way Mr. Sinatra's voice dropped a register or two and Vincent Falcone conducting, how cool was that, man?
Well, I loved his voice through all the years because he always had something. He always took whatever his voice was.
Exactly.
And made the most of
it.
So I remember seeing him, you know, in the late 80s and 90s, and you'd go see him, and he would do something incredibly difficult, like the soliloquy from Carousel Lonely Town, Leonard Bernstein. And you think, why is he doing this? And you'd listen to the voice and the drama and the performance. You know, you played The Song Is You, and I love that freewheeling Billy May arrangement.
Yeah.
That's a song he sang ever since he started singing. And if you notice, if you listen to whatever it is, I think the 1942 version, the first thing he drops as he moves through the years, he ends, the song is, and he does a little falsetto right at the top there. And the first thing he drops when he's doing The Song Is You is the falsetto, because he figures out, that's me showing off my pretty voice rather than the meaning of the song.
Yeah.
And that's a really, that was always the most important thing.
It's so true. Mark Stein, kind enough to join us. You got to go to Stein online, S-T-E-Y-N. And Mark, I have to thank you publicly on the airwaves because I have such respect toward Mr. Sinatra and the Sinatra family. And we come on the air with such respect. And he was always so nice to me. And I was parodying the Frank Sinatra character on SNL.
Yeah.
But he loved it. He got it. He dug it, man. And then he would ask me to perform with him. We did the show, Mark, Solid Gold with Dionne Warwick.
And
we used to go, I got a call, you know, Mr. Sinatra, you never asked what? Where? What am I doing? What am I? You just went. Am I right? And he was he was there, and he always was always so kind in that regard. But so
well, I just want to say something.
Yeah.
About that, Joe, because I think the thing is, he was the most normal superstar. And you know, you're talking about he'd been an abnormally celebrated person since 1942. And it's very difficult to put to do that and not go crazy.
Exactly.
And if you compare him to whoever you want to talk about, Elvis, Michael Jackson, Madonna, he was the most normal superstar.
Exactly.
And I think that's that puts him in a different camp from the other.
Well said. That's exactly right. And he was always, and when I would talk with him, and again, I was never on the inside because I was always in awe.
No.
Did you meet Mr. Sinatra?
Yeah, and I'll just say that, because the thing about it is, like, I'm just a kid and I meet him, so I think I'm going to be on the inside. You know, I'm going to be Jimmy Van Heusen. He's going to like me so much he's running with me all over Palm Springs. And of course, he, you know how this is. And it isn't like that at all. He's very nice to me, but, you know, he's, as I say, he's been treated abnormally by the world since 1942. Yeah. He didn't let Princess Margaret get on the inside, so there's no reason for him to let me get on the inside. And it takes you a while to, you know, but I treasure those. I treasure those things. And
exactly.
Sammy Khan introduced me, and he said, this is Mark's from Canada, where that gal got you started. And what he meant by that was Ruth Lowe, who wrote I'll Never Smile Again.
Yes.
Which was his first big number one with the Tommy Dorsey Band, and he sang it all the way to the end. And, you know, Ruth Lowe, he inducted her into whatever it was, the Songwriters Hall of Fame or something, the 80s. And by then she'd been retired, and she was basically just a Toronto housewife.
She was a Toronto housewife
who'd given him his first number one hit, and he never forgot that.
And they always thought about Miss Lowe, that was about, because it was pretty much wartime. The war started shortly thereafter, and it was such a big hit because all the wives were home while a lot of them lost loved ones in that war. And she really just wrote that about her husband, who had just happened to pass away from illness, correct, Mark?
Yeah, that's right. And she was absolutely devastated.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
she was looking at a couple in the park in Toronto and thinking of her dead husband. And she looked at them and thought, I'll never smile again. And in her grief, somewhere deep inside, the professional songwriter, as upset as she was, thought, that's a great title. I don't want to forget that. You know.
This is great. We're talking with the great Mark Stein, which I've been meaning to do. And, Mark, I have so much to talk to you about. I'd love for you to come up with a set list, because I'm looking at Sinatra Century at Stein Online. And I have to tell you, every time I research it, your name comes up, and you – I don't know – how you write these like what seem like these papers that are of every angle of every it's fact. And matter of fact, I'm going to get to something in a second where I had no idea who arranged a certain number. I went to Stein Online and I found out who did it, baby. Let me tell you that. But you had the top 100 tunes, and you put the first one. It was a very good year. Pretty fascinating how Mr. Sinatra absorbed that from a folk song.
Yeah, and the great thing about that song is that the Kingston Trio had done it, and it was all kinds of people had done it, and it hadn't really gone anywhere.
Right.
And the great thing, again, this is a great artist at his best, because he's just driving along. He hears the Kingston Trio, and he's not really listening to it as a Kingston Trio pop song.
Yeah,
he's hearing the possibilities.
Amazing.
And Irvin Drake, who wrote it, was over in London at the time Sinatra and Gordon Jenkins finished that their record. And his publisher in London called him. It was like a holiday weekend. He said, you've got to get here before I go away for 3 days. You won't want to miss this. So he drives into central London to the publisher's office, and the publisher holds the phone out. And Irvin Drake is weeping because finally someone has got the size of his song. Wow. And it's wow. fantastic.
It is great. And Irvin, he was a great guy. Just passed away not too long ago.
Yeah.
And I like the story. I heard Mr. Sinatra coming down the highway going to Palm Springs, and he pulled over on to us with those little telephones on the side of the road, you know? Uh-huh. And he called Gordon Jenkins, right? And he said, yeah. Gordy, I hear this. I want oboes. And, you know, of course, Mr. Sinatra probably said, Mark, look, that I want oboes, baby. I need oboes, you know?
No, he knew what he yes, he knew what yes. he wanted. He knew what he needed to tell the story, and that puts him in a different class from almost any other singer.
Yeah.
He thought about all that.
What a joy to catch up with you, Mark. Can I tell you before we let you go, if I may, sir, your love of Mr. S, your love of music. You're a best-selling New York Times best-selling author. I mean, you're working constantly, yet your love of this music is so appreciated. I want to just thank you on the airwaves, man, for that. You know, but how did it start at a very young age for you, Mark?
Well, my dad liked a lot of music, and he had things like Songs for Swingin' Lovers. And he went so far. So he'd like, if he went to see Sinatra in concert, he liked it if there was I've Got You Under My Skin or whatever. And I was slightly different because I'd listen to that album, and it would be things like, I'd think like Swingin' Down the Lane, which isn't the reason anybody buys Songs for Swingin' Lovers, but it's just a perfect... It's just a perfect little pop song, given just a perfectly light, breezy. And I love the way with Nelson Riddle, the first chorus is just a tad faster than ballad tempo.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the second is really swinging and drives it home. And I got interested in the authors and the arrangers. And he opened up that whole world for me, that there's a superstar singer. And then behind him, there's composers and lyricists and arrangers who all make him a superstar.
Well said.
And that was important to him.
And so appreciated. And a shout-out to James Golden. You may know him as you listen to Bo Snerdly and Mark and Bo chat on the air. Just a shout-out to James. But before we let you go, Mark Stein, this is like two guys. And you listen to Joe Piscopo with the great Mark Stein on 77 Music Radio WABC live from New York, live as live can be. Mm. And Mark, kind enough to join us on this Sunday night. There's a song I got to go to, but I researched it. And it wasn't really recorded until it came out later, the song A Body and Soul. And as I researched it, Mark Stein, I couldn't find who arranged this. Where did this come from? And, of course, I found out from going to Stein online what a fascinating story. And correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm going to play the song because I know Mark feels like I do, the love of Frank Sinatra. And as you listen... as we chat here on a Sunday night, you love Mr. S as much as we do. But Mark, when he did Body and Soul, he did it with the L.A. Is My Lady session with Quincy Jones. I mean, he not the Columbia. The Columbia version was a hysterical story. You said where he wanted to. That's a great. Could you, in a couple of seconds, could you tell us how that Body and Soul, Columbia, 1940 something, and Mr. S was in the studio and he just wanted it longer than it was. Correct?
No, he delivers the. I mean, this is the music business in a nutshell. It's this awkward tango between great art and the most vulgar, crass. Buffoons. Frank's there, and he's really into it, and he's singing it, and he's singing Body and Soul, which is a powerful song. He's singing it with great emotion and with great passion, and he delivers this beautiful thing, and then right at the end, as he holds the final note, and some guy presses the talk back in the studio and says, "Too long!"
Oh! No!
And it's like...
oh, man!
And Sinatra's furious because this is Columbia, the state-of-the-art record company.
Yeah, yeah.
And some guy walks in and says, I think it was Decca. He goes, well, Decca, they can do records that long. And he goes, you mean to tell me some rinky-dink outfit like Decca could release my record A Body and Soul, but Columbia can't? And that's actually, you know, what... That's what there's a lot of that in the music business, and a great artist just has to kind of roll with it.
But as you go decades later, roughly four decades later, as you write, Mark Stein, recording "L.A. Is My Lady" with Quincy Jones, Mr. Sinatra initially put Body and Soul on the short list, and then he did. I was not aware he did a vocal version of it. He did it right there with "L.A. is My Lady," and then they didn't release it till after his death, 2007. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mark.
Yeah.
He went in with Frank Sinatra Jr. conducting a glorious orchestra. Yes.
Yes, he did. He was quite right. I mean, the great thing about Quincy Jones had just come off Thriller with Michael Jackson, which was the biggest album of all time.
Yeah.
So he says, so he starts with Sinatra. Sinatra and Lena Horne are going to do an album together. And the next thing you know, because Quincy Jones has just had the biggest album ever, the project just starts getting bigger. And he says, oh, yeah, Michael Jackson wants to come in and do that track with you. And then Dionne Warwick wants to be on this. And so the whole thing got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then just like a souffle, it collapsed. And
wow.
In the wake of that collapse, yeah. Sinatra and Quincy Jones just went into the studio and did a loose, terrific... The arrangement of After You've Gone that he does on that.
Yeah.
Phil Collins, the rock star,
yeah.
Took that arrangement. I saw him do this. I think it was at the Montreal Jazz Festival or something. He comes out and does this great big lumbering, leaden, earthbound version of Sinatra's arrangement of After You've Gone. And it's such a great swinging album, yeah. And Body and Soul didn't. But they banked the vocal and released it.
Well, I gotta go there because when I hear his voice as he was older, not too long, where he passed away, not too long after that, it touches my heart, Mark Stein. Yep. I know it does yours as well.
Yep.
You could hear, and we're gonna play it. But Mark, with great respect, you gotta come back if you would, man. We love chatting with you. What a great conversation with you here on Sundays with Sinatra. And thank you for understanding and getting it. The greatness of Francis Albert Sinatra, sir.
No, my pleasure, Joe. This is a great show, and it's like the way New York Music Radio used to be, and it's just terrific to listen.
Mark Stein, with respect and love, man. I talk to you soon, Mark. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.